The next up in the line of things that are important about water, as you see in slide 6, is that it makes for a very good solvent, which brings up three important definitions: solvent, solute, and solution. A solution is a mixture. Not all mixtures are solutions, but a solution is an example of a mixture. Specifically, it's a mixture in which something is being dissolved by something else. The entire mixture is the solution. The thing doing the dissolving is the solvent, and the thing being dissolved is the solute. Or there can be multiple solutes. Well, water is able to dissolve quite a few different things. So it's a good over general solvent. Not everything dissolves in water, but a lot of things do. Specifically, things that are either ionic or polar. Ionic compounds, of course, are salts, as we've been talking about, right? And so in 6, we can see that an example of this. You put table salt, which is an example of a salt, sodium chloride, into otherwise pure water. It won't stay crystals of salt in the bottom of the beaker, right? After a while, it will just be salt water. You can see why at the atomic level in this close-up. This is just an edge of a chunk of table salt made up of many positively charged sodium ions and many negatively charged chloride ions. At the surface, which is where the water molecules are, the polarity of those water molecules means that they can attract those ions away from the group of other ions, away from the crystal. Remember that a polar molecule has a part that's partially positive and a part that's partially negative. So the partially positive end of a water molecule, which is which part? Hydrogen, because the electrons are not there as often, will be attracted to the negative chloride ions and pick one away at a time. This one's been picked away, and notice these water molecules. It looks like it's a circle, but really it's a sphere in 3 dimensions. Notice how they're oriented, though. All of the water molecules have oriented themselves so that the partially positive hydrogen is right next to the negative ion because of attraction between unlike charges. Similarly, sodium ions get picked off, but notice how the water molecules swivel so that the partially negative oxygen end of water is next to the positive sodium ion. So these ions are now dissolved. You no longer have really sodium chloride, the compound. What you have is a solution of sodium ions and chloride ions separately in solution. They are the solutes, water is the solvent, the overall mixture is the solution. This is important in biology because life, which is really just the chemical reactions that occur in cells, namely metabolism, is not just chemistry. More specifically, it is aqueous solution chemistry, meaning chemical reactions that are happening in solutions, and aqueous solution means that those in that solution, the specific solvent is water. So that's really what life boils down to. It's what's going on inside the fluid of the cell, which is an aqueous solution. Well, it's easy to explain why ions dissolve well in water, because they are fully charged, right? Slide 7 shows you that it's not just ions, though, that dissolve well in water. Also, proteins, for instance, or any partially charged molecule will also dissolve in water. Proteins are huge molecules compared to water. You can see how many waters are covering this protein. But proteins are made up of many formerly individual amino acids that have been hooked together to make a big polymer. And so there are partial charges all over the surface of typical proteins. Some places it's partially positive, some places it's partially negative, but it doesn't matter to water, right? Because it has both part it has polarity in either direction. It just swivels appropriately so that it shrouds, water molecules shroud or cover this whole protein, keeping it from interacting with other things. So it partially dissolves the protein as well. Okay, now to 8. What we're looking at in this figure is a representation of a reaction called the autoionization of water. And what does auto mean?
Automatically.
Well, yes, that's an example of a word it's used in, but auto by itself as a prefix means self, which is why, like in autopsy, it means looking at yourself. In this case, it means the same species. You don't give an autopsy to anyone except a human. It's a necropsy, otherwise. But yes, auto means self. So this means self-ionization, a reaction in which a molecule ionizes itself, or a type of molecule ionizes itself. And we can see two normal, run-of-the-mill water molecules on the left as reactants. If you have a sample of pure water, so there's nothing there other than water molecules, and there's trillions and trillions of them, even in the tiniest drop, almost all of those water molecules will be just normal water molecules as we've been describing water molecules up to this point, which are polar, complete molecules with no overall charge, right? They are polar, but they're not ions. A tiny fraction, at any given moment, a tiny fraction of that whole population of water molecules will undergo this autoionization. And what's happening here is that one of these two water molecules is going to lose not an entire hydrogen. It has two hydrogens, right? But one of those hydrogens is going to leave that molecule, except not the entire hydrogen atom. The entire hydrogen atom, before the water molecule formed, right? And a hydrogen atom by itself, in other words, is a proton and an electron. All it's going to lose, though, is the proton. The electron's going to stay behind with the oxygen, which makes sense because oxygen is so highly electronegative, right? It has no problem keeping that electron for itself. But the proton gets transferred over to this water molecule, and that results in what you have on the right. Now you don't have two neutral water molecules. You instead have two ions, one of which is a hydronium ion, H3O plus. The plus superscript means that it is an ion. It now has a positive charge. And that's because this one has gained a full positive charge in the form of that proton that got transferred from the other water molecule. The one that lost its proton is also an ion, but it's now a negative ion because it has lost a positive charge. And so it's a hydroxide ion, OH negative. While most of the rest of the water molecules are just regular water molecules. But this happens to a certain tiny fraction of any population of pure water molecules at any given moment. Now, they're not necessarily going to stay ionized. This is a reversible reaction, which is why you have arrows in both directions here. So they can go back. The reverse can happen and could go back to two normal water molecules. And so it's not that this is permanent. It's just that at any given moment, a small fraction of the population of water molecules is going to do this. So you have, you don't have just pure water in a sense. You don't have it in the sense of neutral water molecules. In a pure water sample, you have mostly neutral water molecules and a small fraction of hydronium ions and hydroxide ions. Notice, though, that to create a hydronium ion when all you have is pure water to work with, you have to all simultaneously create a hydroxide ion, right? Because for this one to gain the proton, another one has to lose it. So that means if it is a pure water sample, then however many hydroxide ions there are, there's the same number of hydronium ions. All right? Now, before we get to 9, let me just say that this, you can also, well, it is true that that's what happens in the previous slide. Let me just go back to this previous slide so you're not distracted by this. This is what happens, but a hydronium ion typically will not hang on to that proton very long. It will just lose it to solution as just a hydrogen ion in solution, an H plus. Okay, which would make this just regular water again. So you can also think about this just in terms of one water molecule. If one water molecule loses its proton, or one of its protons from the hydrogen atoms, but only the proton, not the electron, then you're going to have a hydroxide ion and a hydrogen ion. Does that make sense? And so what I want you to get straight in your head here, symbol-wise, is that a hydrogen ion is written as H+. You can call that H+. You can call it a hydrogen ion. But what's another thing that you can call it? What is a hydrogen ion, H+, in terms of subatomic particles? It is simply a proton, right? A proton by itself is a hydrogen ion. So proton, H+, and hydrogen ion are all interchangeable terms. Use those, realize their equivalence in your mind when you're thinking about them. Okay? Now, this brings up, though, the notion of pH, which is in slide 9. pH is an example of a P scale. There are many different P scales used in science. The reason P scales were invented is because it's a pain in the ass, really, to write very large numbers or very small numbers in scientific notation, just because of all the times 10 to the whatever. So they invented P scales when you're talking about a huge range, when it would go to 0.0000 something to 1 and many zeros after it on the other end. Okay? This particular P scale, though, is pH, and the H standing for hydrogen ions. And I'm sure you already realize that the pH scale gives you an indication of a solution's acidity. But let me give you the mathematical definition of pH, which is a value of a specific solution at any given time. pH is defined as the negative base 10 logarithm of the hydrogen ion concentration of a solution. Now, when you write the H plus, that means hydrogen ion, as I've said. When you put that in square brackets, that means concentration of what's in there. So this by itself means concentration of hydrogen ions. And then you have the negative base 10 logarithm of that. Now, a lot of people aren't used to using logarithms, so let's quickly review this. A base 10 logarithm, also called a common logarithm, is the number that you have to raise 10 to as an exponent in order to equal that original number. Okay? The logarithm of a certain number is what the exponent has to be that you raise 10 to in order to equal that number. So, for example, which is it's easiest just to learn it by example, what is the base 10 logarithm of 1,000? 3, because you have to raise 10, which is called the base, to the third power in order to equal 1,000. So the base 10 log of 1,000 is 3. And similarly, the base 10 log of 100 is what? 2. Notice you went down one step. That's one order of magnitude as we defined it in the lab. So something with a log of 2 is only 1/10 as big as something with a log of 3, right? And if you go down 1/10 of that to 10, the log is 1. You see that? What is the log of one? Zero, because one equals 10 raised to the zero power. Any non-zero number raised to the zero power equals one. Okay? What about if you had 1/10? Which you can also say is 10 to the negative 1, right? When you write it as 10 to the negative 1, it's easy to see what the log is. The log of 10 to the negative 1 is negative 1, because you have to raise 10 to the negative 1 to equal 10 to the negative 1. You see that? Okay. Now, the pH scale is centered on 7. You've probably learned this before. A pH of 7 is a neutral solution, indicates a neutral solution with respect to alkalinity or acidity. On one side of the 7 is alkaline solutions or basic solutions. On the other side of the 7 are acidic solutions. And you might have said, well, why have this scale with 7 in the middle? That's not something that we just made up. That's actually based on data. All right? Remember I said when I was talking about auto-ionization of water that the vast majority of the population of water molecules are not ionized, but a small fraction are. Well, it's a measurable fraction, and it's a reliable fraction. With standard conditions, it's always the same fraction. Okay? Now, concentration, there's many different ways of talking about concentration, and we'll talk more about this in the lab, but one of them is molarity, which is moles of solute per liter of solution. And if you actually measure pure water, measure the concentration of the hydrogen ions due to autoionization. In other words, just this part in brackets. The hydrogen ion concentration of pure water equals one times 10 to the negative 7th power molar. All right? Well, what is the log of 10 to the negative 7th? Negative 7. And that's why we define P scales as negative logs, so we don't have to mess with negatives, which are usually used, usually happen. So if it were the positive log of this, it would be negative 7. The negative log is therefore the negative of negative 7, which is positive 7. That's where the 7 comes from. It's a real measurement. It's not that we decided to make 7 the middle of this scale. Okay? Now, you also might have wondered, why did they make a scale that the lower the number gets, the more acidic it is, which is what the truth is. pHs below 7 indicate an acidic solution. An acidic solution is one that has a relatively high concentration of hydrogen ions in it. All right? In other words, a concentration of hydrogen ions that's greater than the concentration of hydroxide ions. Well, in pure water, they're exactly equal, right? Because you can't make one kind of ion without also making the other kind of ion. So they're always going to have equal concentrations, and that's why it's neutral. An acid is a substance that when you put it into water, it dissociates into ions. Part of it will become hydrogen ions, and then whatever else is left gets in solution as well as another solute. So an acid increases the concentration of hydrogen ions beyond what's already there due to just water auto-ionizing itself. But back to this notion of it being below 7. Well, let's say that this pure water, which is 10 to the negative 7th molar concentration, let's add hydrogen ions by adding an acid to this water and boost the hydrogen ion concentration 10 times. If it's 10 to the negative 7th molar before you boost it, what is 10 times that concentration? Remember, 10 to the negative 7th is 0.000001. That's 10 to the negative 7th. What is 10 times bigger, as big as that?
10 to the negative 6th.
Right. 0.00001. Right? No. One more zero. No, I'm right. So 10 to the negative 6th is 10 times as big as 10 to the negative 7th. Right? Well, what is the log of 10 to the negative 6th? Negative 6. And therefore, the negative log, which is what the pH is 6. So when the pH goes down by one whole number, that really is a concentration of hydrogen ions that's 10 times bigger. So the pH scale is not linear. A linear scale is one in which each step is the same size. In a logarithmic scale, which this is, each step is 10 times bigger than the step below it or above it. Okay? If you went to a pH of 5, that would be a concentration of 10 to the negative 5th molar, which is 100 times as big as 10 to the negative 7th. So it's two orders of magnitude. Is that all clear? That's why it goes down. Because it's really representing a 10 to the negative 7th, 10 to the negative 6th, which is 10 times bigger, 10 to the negative 5th, and so on. Also, there's nothing magic about 1. 1 is not the limit, or 0 is not the limit. 14 is not the limit on the other end either, but most things fall in that very wide range. When you have greater than 7, though, that means you actually have fewer hydrogen ions than you do in pure water. Because you would have, for instance, for a pH of 8, that would be 10 to the negative 8th molar, which is only 1/10 as acidic as water, or 1/10 the concentration of hydrogen ions. So from 7 above numerically, when it goes up numerically above 7, then that's a smaller hydrogen ion concentration, and we call those solutions basic or alkaline instead of acidic. It's the opposite. All right, now pH is just one of many variables. Well, before I finish that sentence, let's just look at 10 to give you some real life examples of solutions and their corresponding pHs. Pure water right there in the middle. But above, well, this figure shows numerically low pHs, the acidic ones above it. Usually it would be the other way around with 14 on the top, 1 on the bottom. But anyway, things are above 7 on this figure, which means numerically below 7, are the acidic solutions. And notice, for instance, the gastric juice in your stomach is a pH of 2. Well, that's 5 orders of magnitude. That's 100,000 times as acidic as water is. It has a 100,000 times greater concentration of hydrogen ions. So that's a strong acidic solution, which is why your stomach is the most inhospitable place in your body for things to live. And that's why the millions of bacteria that you take in with every bite of food, or that you just breathe in, you're continuously swallowing those. And most species of bacteria, once they get put into the stomach, will get killed because of that low pH.
Why isn't there anything at 9?
There just isn't in this example. There are many things that are 9, just not in this particular example. But anything numerically greater than 7, those are not acidic. Those are basic or alkaline. But pH in general is a variable, and there's all kinds of important variables that organisms deal with. As part of homeostasis, they try to maintain values of those variables within lethal limits, right? Well, we talked about temperature as a variable when we first talked about homeostasis. and feedback, pH is another important variable. Those two in particular are important to proteins. Proteins, remember, are the kinds of molecules that do all the major jobs in cells. That those are what give you your traits or any organism its traits. Well, whatever the job is that a protein does, which is a diverse set depending on the protein, an individual protein is able to perform that function because it has a specific shape, which can also be called the conformation. If it doesn't have that shape, that protein will not function to do that job. Well, both temperature and pH can change in either temperature or pH, and not even very much of a change, can have a drastic effect on the shape of a protein, which means organisms can't tolerate very wide ranges in temperature or very wide ranges in pH because their proteins will lose their function, they will die. Here you see the effects of acid rain. Acid rain is, as the name implies, raindrops that have high concentrations of hydrogen ions in them because they've been acidified by various pollutants from industry, sulfur-containing compounds that get spewed into the air, for instance, combine with water and undergo a reaction that forms sulfuric acid. So instead of it being neutral rain that's falling on the plants, it's sulfuric acid rain. And that they can't tolerate that. You can see that this is a very unhealthy forest. And that's bad news for us because plants are producers. Producers are, ecologically speaking, there are two major kinds of organisms, producers and consumers. Producers can make their own food. We'll talk more about this in a different chapter. They feed themselves, but they also feed all of the consumers in the world, either directly, because something eats that producer, or indirectly. A consumer either eats a producer, or a consumer eats a consumer that eats a producer, or a consumer eats a consumer that eats a consumer that eats a producer, and so on. We all absolutely rely on producers because we can't make our own food. So if you start killing off the producers, the consumers are going to go extinct. Oh, that's the chapter.